Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now it's time for the Friday gathering, and I'm joined here in the studio by political correspondent with the Sunday Times, Claire Scott, Group Head of News at the Irish Independent, Kevin Doyle, and Law Lecturer at the University of Galway and columnist with thejournal.ie, Larry Donnelly. You're all very welcome. Good to have you here.
Good to be here.
We can't really call this the eve of the election, can we? It's the hours before the starting gun is fired, and we know, Kevin, it's going to be on the 29th of November. So what are you expecting? Can you set the scene for us? I mean, we can never tell how a campaign is going to go over the next 22 days or so, but the big themes.
Yeah, well, the big theme is the starting point, obviously, which is that there is an expectation there that the most obvious government at the end of this is something very similar to the one that we have now. So you're immediately going to see the opposition parties talking about really, after 100 years, do you want the same again? I think that's going to be one of the big lines that we'll be hearing from the likes of Sinn Féin and some of the smaller parties over the next 24 hours, 48 hours in particular. But when we get into the issues, I think housing has to be up there as number one. I think the opposition parties will be very happy to try and make that the topic of this campaign. The government parties will probably want to talk much more about the economy, about the money, that the fact that we're awash with money and that you would like to keep that going in some sense. And then you will have other topics, I think, that will bubble up, be it through incidents. For example, the anniversary of the Dublin riots will fall a few days before polling. So you can be sure that that will bring immigration back up to the top of the agenda, even though I think none of the established parties will particularly want to make that a hot topic. And then, Claire, as you say, campaigns really matter, because the truth is, while we have loads of polls right now, most people will actually decide in the next 3 weeks for definite. Well, they have an opinion now, but in the next 3 weeks, they will actually decide for definite. So it does matter. And last time out, pensions became the issue, something we hadn't been talking about going into the election at all. And then suddenly there was a row over what age people should be allowed to get the state pension. Sinn Féin had a clear policy on it. Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael were kind of flapping around. And that's, I think, what gave Sinn Féin the big boost that ultimately led to what was their best election ever.
Yeah, you see, that's the thing. We just don't know what the big issue is going to be. On the face of it, you can say it's going to be housing, health, maybe immigration, but it could be something completely different by the time we get into it. Now, the parties in government, Claire, they're going to have to differentiate themselves from each other. But if they spend too much time on that, they leave a gap for Sinn Féin to creep up the inside, don't they? They've got to be watchful.
They do have to be watchful. And I think it has been interesting to see them kind of bicker so heavily over the last while. We've had this phony war ongoing, I think, since the budget, really, and probably before. And it's interesting, I think, that Fianna Fáil in particular are going harder at Fine Gael. I think I've seen the Taoiseach come out quite strongly, you know, in relation to crime in particular. He's been very clear he wants to take over the justice portfolio if they're coming back.
Mm-hmm. And politics of substance, like he's made mention of that a couple of times too, which is interesting in the context of Simon Harris.
This is it. He really wants to present himself as the experienced, the senior politician, you know, the good head on strong shoulders. And that's going to be the argument going into this election. But it is interesting, you know, Kevin mentioned the economy there and that this idea that they've handled, the finance and the public expenditure portfolio quite well over the last number of years. But I think leaders' questions yesterday actually set out the kind of the battleground that we're going to see coming into this election on the part of Sinn Féin. We saw the 9 million euro pouch is being brought up again that Norma Foley dedicated in the last budget. We're going to see the bike shelter brought up again, the security hut. This idea that although the economy is doing well, you haven't spent money effectively and we can do a better job.
Yeah, interesting, isn't it? And I want to talk to you, Larry, about the price of eggs, because our reporter Una Kelly went out and chatted to people and they were all talking about the price of eggs in the States, that was one of the factors. You know, in some cases in Iowa, up by 116%. Now, that might seem like a minor thing, but we have an issue here with the cost of living. And we saw what happened in the States. The focus was on much bigger issues, but actually it came down to how much money you have in your pocket.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a very big issue in this campaign. Cost of living, we know that housing obviously will be in the mix. We know immigration will be there. But cost of living is the one that could be lurking in the background that perhaps the opposition parties might be able to make the most hay out of. Because if you talk to people on the streets or in the supermarkets, it is the one thing that just about everyone is giving out about. And as with politics everywhere, it's the party of government that gets the blame, whether they're responsible for it or not. And that's going to be very interesting to watch. As are, I think, one of the things just vis-a-vis Sinn Féin and the erosion in its support, what I'm wondering is some of those younger, more progressive voters who I think were drawn to Sinn Féin because of housing, some of whom are now disaffected, I'm wondering in which direction they might flow. And in particular, whether they might go to Labour, to the Sock Dems. I don't think they're likely to go to government parties or independents, but I think that they could flow in either one of those directions. And lastly, I think if there is anyone who will benefit perhaps most strongly from cost of living issues and some of the other things that have been mentioned, it could be independents of all stripes and varieties around the country who arguably are most in touch with people on the ground in their constituencies.
Yeah, Alison O'Connor reminded us of a point that came up after the local and European elections when Sinn Féin, despite being in opposition, were being blamed for not changing things, which is an extraordinary thing in the first place. But I wonder, will that vibe continue into this election, Larry?
Well, that's the big question, you know. And look, to some extent, this kid, because of recent revelations, because of the slide and because of the abysmal performance in the locals and the Europeans, Sinn Féin is fighting a game of damage limitation. Whether, however, because of some of the attacks, whether they can turn some of these attacks into a gain, whether they can get back some of the anti-establishment people by saying that, look, they're coming for us because they were never going to let our movement into power without a fight. These are the elites. These are the establishment. You have to get back to us. Will they take that tack in the campaign? It'll be interesting to see. But I think most importantly, from their point of view, they need to get things back on the housing because it remains the biggest problem, I think, facing the country. And that's where they have an advantage.
Yeah. The polls, we know we need to be careful with polls, Kevin. But certainly there's a sense that for both Sinn Féin and to a certain extent Fianna Fáil, that they will do better, both of those parties, than the polls are telling us. Explain that one to us.
I think so. Well, first of all, on the Sinn Féin thing, if you look, they've obviously had a third 6 months. But if you look at the polls, they've kind of landed between 16 and 18% consistently, regardless of which company carries out the polls. So that, to me, suggests that is their rock bottom. That is their worst day, lowest day out.
So not what we saw in the local and Europeans.
No, I think the turnout in the local and Europeans would have an impact on that. And obviously locals are very local. We're not going at local elections. You don't talk as much about the next government and what kind of a coalition you can have and who will be Taoiseach. So the dynamic is different in a general election. And their strategy is quite different now in terms of the number of candidates they have picked and where they're putting extra people on tickets. So I think that's their lowest base, which suggests to me that if they have any sort of a decent campaign, they can bring that back into 20% in there, which at the moment would bring you to where Fianna Fáil is. But I actually think, and it's first day of campaign, so I'm loath to make predictions, but I think Fianna Fáil will probably come out as the biggest party at the end of that of this, despite where
Larry's
the polls
nodding
are
in agreement
right now.
Beside you.
There is a strange thing. Micheál Martin always goes mad about polls. There is a strange kind of shyness with Fianna Fáil in polls for some reason. It has consistently underperformed in opinion polls, and they do better on the day. Probably in this case, the reason I say that, though, is that incumbency factor, that Fianna Fáil have established candidates in pretty much all parts of the country, which Fine Gael don't. And that's where I think the difference might be.
That's going to be really interesting to watch, Claire, isn't it? Like, Fine Gael have all of these new candidates. I mean, they have their leader who's crisscrossing the country all of the time. His face is on all of the posters as far as we can see. But their candidates, you know, some of them are really breaking new ground, aren't they?
They really are. And I think that the lack of incumbency for Fine Gael is a massive risk. And as you say, that's exactly why we're seeing sort of Brand Harris being projected. He's going to have a huge amount of work to do over the next few weeks to sort of build this sort of rapport and confidence in the new candidates that they're bringing forward. And I think it was in the Sunday Independent poll at the weekend that showed that the margin between Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil tightened when you presented the candidates for each person's individual constituency to them. Yeah, it's a massive risk factor, but they're well aware of it.
Mm-hmm. Larry, when we talk about polls, we can't ignore what happened in the United States over the last couple of days. Lessons for Ireland, for Irish voters, for political parties based on Donald Trump's successful election?
I'm not sure how much you can directly extrapolate from it, but look, you know, polling is a very tough business. And if anything, the U.S. election demonstrated something that's true about the electorate here, as we've seen in recent elections, and true about electorates throughout the Western world. And that is that they are very, very volatile. And what a poll says on one day is not necessarily how things are going to turn out, far from it. And I think the further issue we have here, which I think probably distinguishes the situation from the United States, is the amount of people here, and there is good data to support this, who make up their minds at the very last minute, including people who don't know exactly which way they're going to go until they walk into a polling station. It is very difficult for political polling, no matter how advanced or sophisticated, to account for all of that. And the other point is, I think in elections, campaigns throw up there's so many unknown unknowns right now. We don't know. We can only surmise what the issues are. But who knows what the campaign might throw up, and who knows which way that might change the trajectory of the race.
Kevin?
The one thing, Claire, I'd say about polls is I've listened to politicians, and I've no doubt they've sat here with straight faces telling you, we don't care about polls. We don't listen to polls.
All the time.
Polls has no impact on what we're planning or what way we're going to do with that. Those very same people, Claire, who sit here and tell you that are texting me whenever there's a poll in the Sunday Independent on a Saturday going, any steer, anything going on. And I'm sure they do it, Claire, when it's in the Sunday Times or wherever else. The parties are obsessed. The politicians are obsessed with the polls. So any of them that come in here over the campaign and tell you it doesn't influence how they think.
I'd say Kevin said.
Well, it's true. It's true. I won't show you the text messages because that would be unfair. But you can trust me on that. They really, really do put a lot of stay in the polls, because what the polls show you is the trend. So we know that at one point Sinn Féin were way, way, way out in front, right? Now they're a little bit behind of the other parties. So the figures might be off. You have to remember most polls are plus or minus 3%. So a 3% up for Sinn Féin and a 3% down for Fine Gael entirely changes the look of the results, but is all within the margin of error. So polls are not perfect, but what they do show us is the trend. And to Larry's point, the data, there was an exit poll after that Ireland Thinks did after the local elections, and it showed that 16% decided in the last 24 hours. So these are the people asked after they voted, had basically decided that day which way they were going to go, and another 29% had decided in the last week. So that's how important campaigns are.
Listen, I wonder, Claire, from your point of view, you know, in your work as a political correspondent, have you heard much mention of the role that Donald Trump's going to play in this election in terms of campaigning? You know, we have to be careful now. We need an experienced hand on the tiller because we don't know what's coming down the tracks. Do you think that's going to be a main plank from the incumbents?
I think so. And I think, you know, we're going to see a lot of reshuffle around sort of manifestos in terms of the economy coming to the fore over the next couple of weeks, because
there'll be rewrites done, do you
think? Rewrites done, I think, as we speak, probably, because there was a lot of planning for launches next week. But it is going to make a massive difference if he delivers on what he has put out during the course of his own campaign. This idea of, you know, dropping down corporation tax to 15% in the US, matching it with our own, and also kind of putting this extra political pressure on companies to stay put and to return. Mm-hmm. That could have a
massive
impact.
And the tariffs, of course, as well.
Tariffs are huge, although it was interesting. I was in Brussels at the start of the week for Michael McGrath's confirmation hearing, talking to officials within the commission, and they used the exact same word that the Taoiseach used yesterday to describe Trump, which is that he's transactional. And that if we can put forward a decent business case to him, he'd be open to that kind of discussion. So it's this idea that you can kind of bring Trump into a boardroom and have a decent conversation with him and reason with him. But I think there's a whole other range of issues to do with Trump. I mean, his stance on climate in particular will have a massive impact on Europe. You know, the fact that he's threatening to withdraw from NATO, I mean, that will have a huge impact on Ireland's, you know, defence planning and the money that we need to dedicate to defence, even if we aren't a member of NATO. Europe, the rest of Europe is going to be expected to step up in some way. So the implications for Trump are massive.
Yeah, I just wonder what you think of his first appointment as Chief of Staff, Larry, Susan Wiles, because he did say after his first term that one of his biggest mistakes was the people he put into his administration. I mean, we know he fired pretty much all of them, didn't he? He's determined to get that right this time. What does her appointment tell us?
Well, I think it's significant in at least one major respect, in the sense that she'll be the first woman to serve as White House Chief of Staff, which I think is welcome. I look at her reputation. I know she works for a person that a lot of people have difficulty with, but her reputation is sterling. She's praised by Democrats and Republicans alike. She has worked with establishment Republicans in the past. Her affinity to Trump is something relatively new. So I think she's a decent appointment. I think she is well-respected, as I say. I'd be hopeful that she would be a voice of reason. So when you look at the other cast of characters who look to get posts in a Trump administration, we might be looking at her as somebody who potentially could play a pivotal role in mitigating against his worst instincts.
Mm-hmm. She ran his super PAC, didn't she? The one called Save America, which was behind a lot of the fundraising and spending in the run-up to the election.
Yes, and she did so with ruthless efficiency. I mean, she was the gatekeeper. She was the one who tried to reconcile all the competing factions. We've seen a couple of tell-alls about the Trump campaign and the disarray it might have been in, despite the fact that he won. And she was the one who kind of navigated all the choppy waters in the turmoil. At the end of the day, the buck stops with him. We all know his impulsive ways and all that sort of thing. But I do think that all things considered, she is a good appointment. And for those who take issue with her, all I would say is that it could be a lot worse.
Okay. Well, do you agree with that assessment that a lot of what he's threatening, you know, we can take it as him laying down the parameters of how a deal might be done? So when we think about the tariffs, really that's a threat. And if you can come up with something to match it, it'll be taken off the table?
Look, I would never predict. I did it a couple times years ago. I would never predict what this guy is going to do. But my own view is that, yes, at this stage, it probably things like tariffs, I think he uses them as bargaining chips, as ploys. But I do think it is incumbent upon the Irish government and politicians to be prepared for worst-case scenarios. And in the context of a general election, let me just say this. In terms of the threat to foreign direct investment and, let's say, worst-case scenario, which I think we should always be have in the back of our mind at least, and the damage that could potentially do to the exchequer, some of the things that have been mooted about taxation and expenditure, which are politically popular, the more cautious, perhaps wise course of action might be to take a more measured approach. But in the context of a general election, that doesn't make for popular politics. So there's a difficult narrative there as well.
We have an awful lot to lose here, Kevin, if Donald Trump does some of the things that Claire and Larry have been talking about, in particular around multinationals and foreign direct investment.
Yeah, well, we saw the giveaway budget, which was largely based on corporation tax, which is largely based on American companies based in Dublin.
And, just a few of them.
Just a few of them. A very, very small number. It wouldn't take an earthquake to start unravelling some of that. And it's interesting because we're going into an election now where we're going to see manifestos probably over the course of the next week, and they're all going to have massive promises. We've already seen things like the parties outbidding each other on how cheap they can do childcare for. They're basically just going to start paying all our creche fees for us. We've seen promises on the pension rises, and that's before the campaign even started. And that is based on where the economy is at today. So now we're going into 4 years of Trump where that may start to slow down, because even if he doesn't start getting some of those big companies to pull out of Ireland, they will want a European base anyway. But it's more about new job creation. It's more about where they're going to invest the next manufacturing base. Where are they going to invest the next scientific research base? And that's, I think, what Trump poses the bigger threat to. So it's our growth that might be impacted more than what we have already in place. And that does kind of make you wonder, does the magic money tree, which the parties are basing their election promises on, actually, that's quite risky.
Mm-hmm. Will we hear much about it, do you think, from the parties going into this campaign? Will it be something that they try to distract from, or will they deal with it head on? Well, the prospect of this happening.
I think they'll probably not want to go there in any heavy way. I mean, all of the three main party leaders have all said quite unsavoury things about Donald Trump in the past, but they're now all in a position where they want to be Taoiseach, and therefore they have to be a bit more diplomatic about it. So they won't want to get into that. I think in an election, you're trying to sell a hope and a vision. And I think Fine Gael probably have learned in the past that trying to sell prudence, which they did a few years ago, didn't really work for them. So I think you won't hear a lot of it, albeit they will talk about having set up the rainy day fund and that sort of thing. But let's be honest, it's probably not going to be the biggest question on the doorstep either. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, they're not going to really go there in any significant way, I think.
Yeah, as the dust settles on the election in the United States, Larry, I mean, is there anything you could say to Democrats now that they got wrong, really wrong, with Kamala Harris's campaign?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, Joe Biden held on for too long. If he had stepped aside shortly after he visited Ireland, actually, and said he was going to pass the torch, I think not only would it have cemented his legacy, it would have allowed for a competitive primary process in which a stronger candidate than Kamala Harris would have emerged, in my view. I'm not saying that would have changed the result ultimately, but I think Democrats would have been in a better position than having this sort of truncated campaign with a candidate who was so tied to the current unpopular president that it made her life difficult, mm-hmm. and she didn't do herself any favors.
Yeah, she passed up on opportunities to distance herself from him. I mean, there was that moment on The View when she was asked, is there anything you would have done differently? She didn't really have an answer for it.
No, she said that I can't think of anything offhand.
Yeah.
And look, the fact is that she was not a strong candidate, but it was bigger than that. It was a thorough repudiation. Look at the size of the victory. It was bigger than Kamala Harris, bigger than Joe Biden. It was a thorough repudiation of the Democratic Party and the Democratic ticket. And in my view, it is in large part because, again, people on the side of the Atlantic may scoff, but in large part, it's because the Democratic Party is perceived by people in the places that determine the outcome of presidential elections to have gone way too far to the left.
Okay. Have you seen the commentary, Claire, I might come to you on this, that America just wasn't ready for a female president? Do you set any store in that? What do you think?
I think it's difficult to say, but I mean, obviously we had Hillary Clinton rejected in 2016, and
is it about the candidate though, rather than the gender?
I think the issue mainly with Kamala Harris was that she was given a very short amount of time to turn this around, and she wasn't prepared to criticise the measures that the administration had put in over the last number of years. And Trump just had his finger on the pulse and isn't afraid to say whatever he needs to say to get ahead. And I think planning for the Democrats the next time around. I think, you know, at the beginning of that campaign, it was ridiculous to see George Clooney have to write a letter in the New York Times, you know, in order to get Biden to stand aside. So I just think planning around this the next time around, mm-hmm. You know, but then again, it is difficult to say the complete rejection of Kamala Harris. There has to be an aspect of misogyny to that as well.
Do you think, Kevin?
I would say undoubtedly. I have absolutely no doubt. I was over in America covering the Clinton election. The things that are acceptable to say about a female candidate in American politics is quite astonishing. I have to say, Claire, it's not just men. If you drill down and look at the data and you look at the exit polls, a lot of women do not want to be led by a woman either. I think 45% of women voted for Trump. This is a man, for all you want to say about what he has done about abortion, things he has said about women. J.D. Vance talking about cat women, mm-hmm. Single women with cat ladies. And yet 45% of women still thought that was the ticket for them. So it's not just men and misogyny. I think there is a wider issue there around the fact that some people still don't think that a woman should have her finger on the nuclear button.
Yeah, but we said it before here on this programme. Donald Trump is a formidable politician.
Absolutely.
Like he is unbelievable. He manages and his team, they just cut through everything else and they get to the issues that they know people are going to vote on, and it works.
There's different standards though. There is absolutely no doubt that the two candidates in that race, and I don't think Kamala Harris was a good candidate at all, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I don't think she should have been the one there, but that's the way it played out. But I think that they are absolutely held to different standards. Even look at the garbage debate, which kind of took the last few days of the campaign. You know, at one point they're saying Joe Biden is senile, and then he has a slip of a thing and says that, and it's that's what they all think of it. But Donald Trump can say everything he wants about Democrats and how they're a threat to society. And people just go at us, just Donald.
It's so interesting when you hear that voters who are going to vote for Donald Trump will say to you, oh, well, we don't really take that seriously from him. But if a Democrat says something, it's the be all and end all.
Yeah, that's true. And I would say that Donald Trump is held to a different standard than all candidates. I take the point about misogyny, and there's no doubt about it. But just rewind a little bit. When Joe Biden had some, let's call them senior moments, Donald Trump was having some senior moments, yet Donald Trump never got any criticism for that.
Listen,
Biden got it all.
I've had a senior moment now because I'm nearly out of time and we're about to run over. Thank you so much for coming in, Claire and Kevin and Larry.